Okay, well, we're talking to Mark Bourne, who's, you may remember from past interviews, Mark is a homeless person who was actually beaten by troll busters out in Capitola Way so seriously that he had to be hospitalized, and I guess you had a problem at the hospital regarding the little finger of your right hand, which is now disabled.
Well, it's doing better.
But, I mean, doesn't it require an operation?
And they said it's critical that it happens like within 2 to 5 days. And by the time we got through all the paperwork, it had been 2 weeks, so he said that it was too late to do the operation.
Now, wait a minute. Usually if a bone is broken, don't you simply have to re-break it and then just reset it?
Well, I guess he could have done that. I didn't really ask for that. I don't really want...
I see.
What it is, like a hairline fracture on the joint part of the bone. And what they were going to do is go in and put little bitty screws in there, and they said it had to be done within 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. But now what they did is they put... gave me some tape, and I tape it to this finger, and I bend the finger, and I exercise it, so now I can bend it.
So are you saying that it's probably okay, or do you think that there still is an operation that needs to be done?
Well, it's okay, but I don't know. I don't think the swelling is going to go down.
You think the swelling will remain?
Yeah, and there's fragments of bone up on the top. I asked them if they could do that, and they said, no, I don't think we could do that, so...
Well, you also have been... I'm sorry.
I don't know what to do about the swelling part of it. If the swelling would go back down, then there would be more mobility in it.
Right. I know that this was a circumstance where you talked about before, where three guys one evening started following you in the SoCal Capitola area and started kicking you and caused some significant injuries. I guess you eventually went to the hospital the next day. Your head was bloody and... You had some problems with your ribs and such?
Right, I still have broken ribs, and I went back yesterday and I asked them, how are these going to heal? When I sleep at night, I hear them cracking and popping, and if they're cracking and popping, they're not going to fuse.
You sleep outside?
Pretty much, yeah.
Have you requested some sort of indoor support, like a motel room, because of this emergency?
Right, they've given me 3 days of bed rest in a motel, 3-day vouchers.
And that was that?
And I went out to the shelter and asked them, and they have quite a waiting list out there, so...
For the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program?
No, for the...
River Street Shelter?
What's it called? Actually, it's kind of a drug program.
Community House,
yeah.
Right.
That, I figured that way... to me, they're going to heal if they get... lots of rest, you know, and the way I'm moving around and stuff, there's, you know, when I hear them cracking and popping, I know they're not...
But subsequent to this, you got tickets, right, from the police department?
Right.
And what were those tickets for?
Basically, they were for riding my bike without a light. And two of them, I had a light attached to my bike, and it was working, and the sheriff said, well, I'm going to give you a ticket anyway. If you don't like it, sue me. Yeah.
This was a particular deputy, or
it was just a sheriff in Capitola. In the Capitola area, it basically is patrolled. The outer limits are basically patrolled by the sheriff's department.
Well, I see. However, you recently got a ticket from a Santa Cruz police officer downtown. Looks like yesterday, about 4:15.
I got yesterday about 2.
So you got 2 tickets downtown for bicycle tickets. One's bicycle on the sidewalk, and this is at. Looks like 10:25 in the night on Wednesday.
10:25 at night?
No, that's what it says. It says 2:25, which is military time for 10:25. The other ticket is 4:13 in the afternoon.
Okay.
So you got 2 bicycle tickets here. Are you in fact a confirmed bicycle felon?
It sure seems like it.
And that isn't my
goal in life, though. You know, I don't want to. I got this bike so I can make some progress, get somewhere, get some work, do something positive, and it's turning out totally negative because the cops are being...
So one would imagine that these bicycle tickets were given to you because some citizen saw you riding in a dangerous fashion, perhaps it threatened their children?
Oh, no, it wasn't anything like that. There hasn't been any threats.
Perhaps you were obstructing a fire engine or leaving the scene of a crime?
No. I think maybe what somebody told me is these guys have a quota, and they, you know, bicycles is the thing to do.
No, I think I know what you're talking about. I saw two female officers yesterday downtown writing ticket after ticket to people between the office, around the hippie planter, as it's called, at Cooper and Pacific, up to Cathcart and Pacific.
That's exactly right.
And my comment when I passed these people was, get a job. You know, good work, officer. Keep up the good work. The harassment continues downtown.
I went from the shelter. I went and talked to the people at the shelter. And I came to the past the Santa Cruz bookshop, and when I hit that other past the theater, well, that's one way road this way, and you know my justification was you won't let us ride on the sidewalks, you know, so I just
you were on your way to the Elm Street meal, you said before,
and. She gave me a ticket for riding my bike the wrong way on a one-way street, and I told her, well, you know, you don't let us ride on the sidewalks. Two people rode by while I was getting my ticket, and they didn't bother them. There's three cops standing around.
Well, do you think, had you ever had problems with these female officers before?
No, I didn't have any.
So
I've been trying to stay out of Santa Cruz since what happened to Happy John.
What would you feel that the police are targeting homeless people and that there's danger of violence from the police to homeless?
Well, it seems like that. I don't understand it. I haven't had any problems with them except on the bike.
Now,
I don't know what they're.
It seems to me, Mark, the question is. You know, a police officer who's giving a ticket to a homeless person on a bicycle can only be engaging in a punitive activity because you don't look like the kind of guy who can afford to pay a bicycle ticket.
Yeah. I mean, that's my beef, you know. I can barely afford to even have the bike. I found the bike in the trash. I find parts in the trash. I put them together. I don't go out and steal bikes. I don't sell drugs. So.
Let me ask you another question while we're on that. I know that we've heard reports recently of individuals being ticketed for looking in the trash. Have you heard of any harassment around this?
I got a ticket for scavenging the other day. I was standing by a trash can waiting for my friend over. He was in the bar. What's the name of it?
Whatever it was, what kind of a ticket? What were you doing?
I was just standing by the trash can waiting for him to come out. And actually, I was drinking a quart of beer. I had it sitting on the ground about 10 feet away.
Were you drunk and obnoxious and harassing passersby?
Standing there looking at the people walking around and stuff, and these cops come and they start giving me the third degree, and I said...
About what?
About what I was doing there, and I said, I'm waiting for a friend.
Is this Santa Cruz police?
Yeah, and they said, well, we're going to give you a break. They saw my beer bottle. They said, we're going to give you a break. We're not going to give you a ticket for drunk in public. And
were you drunk in public?
No, I wasn't drunk.
Could someone reasonably have suspected you were drunk in public? I mean, was your speech slurred?
I was just standing there.
How much beer had you drunk?
I bought a quart of beer, and I drank about two-thirds of it.
You're not unusually sensitive to alcohol?
No, I might drink a couple quarts
a day. Maybe they were referring to open container rather than drunk in public?
Well, either I don't know exactly what he said, but he didn't give me a ticket for that. Then he hands me a ticket, and he says, here's a ticket for scavenging. And I wasn't taking anything out of the trash can or anything like that. And he says that there's a law against scavenging in Santa Cruz.
Who is this cop?
If that's the case, why don't you have a sign on the trash cans? If you did, then that seems like that would be justified.
I think rather they should put locks and maybe kind of protective devices on trash cans so that those who attempt to loot this very valuable resource, well, maybe get an electric shock, possibly, or some kind of disabling, minor punishment to show them how to obey the law.
Well, in Capitola, they encourage recycling. And 41st Street, everywhere over there, it's all okay. Except the only problem is on, you know, if you're on somebody's property, they might, I've been told by the Capitola police, I was on the property of the big Catholic church, and they said, this is private property, you gotta, it's okay to recycle, but do it on cans that are on the street or not on private property.
So how many tickets does this meet, does it, have you gotten in the last few weeks since you were assaulted?
Now, just in the last four, I think. I don't know what's going on.
Now, what's the story? I guess have you have any sense about whether people are getting ticketed for sleeping? I know that there has been I haven't heard many reports of sleeping tickets at all in the last few months.
In the last 3 weeks, I've seen people sleeping on the sidewalk, right where that lady's walking, sleeping so she'd have to walk around them. And I don't know.
Some people are not getting ticketed for sleeping.
I haven't seen any. I don't know.
How about troll busting incidents or instances of violence toward people outside? Any more reports on that?
No, I haven't heard of anything.
So it sounds like we're good on those two counts. It's just the bike police are out there, I guess, folks. So keep your eyes open and make sure you walk your bike on the sidewalk and don't ride the wrong way downtown. Thank you, Mark. Anything you want to add to this?
No. I also bought a flashlight at Walmart, and I put the batteries in it.
Well, now you heard about Dallas, the fantasy isle, American dream, affluent style. But Robin Leach might be surprised by what I see before my eyes, watching lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me. Just to survive's an awful fight. I spend my time collecting cans while you're out working on your tans. On lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me, you and me. Now 30,000 children died while some politician lied. They bust the starving kid who steals while the fat cats make their sweetheart deals. On lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me.
Robin Screech here with another thrilling episode of Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Today's journey takes us to the streets of your city, where we'll visit the homeless in their native habitats, street corners of makeshift cardboard shelters, sewer grate and doorway bedrooms, soup line kitchens lit by blazing oil barrel fireplaces, alleyways of the addicted, the unemployed, the destitute, the insane, eating and sleeping in the most unlikely places. It's all here on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Now, in the ghetto, there's always room for the ethnic population boom. The melting pot boils past the brim while the people's future's looking grim. On lifestyles of the poor of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV. Lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon, you and me.
And that was Mark Levy, Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless, from one of his cool albums of the late 80s. Of course, these are Lifestyles of the late 90s, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, your twice-weekly civil rights show. We have a call-in line that should be open, well, where it's going to be tied up for about 10 or 15 minutes while we talk to our next guest, who's a man about politics here in Santa Cruz, who actually helped to elect the current city council majority. But after that's over, I want you to get ready to light up the phone lines at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. We're going to be asking you who of all our local politicians, activists, broadcasters, most deserves a cream pie in the schnoz. That's going to be the question of the week, and we want to get your votes. You can actually give a call to the Huff line to do that. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, because that line is almost always open. Register your vote at 423-HUFF. Who deserves a pie most? Is it a city council member? Is it perhaps your favorite talk show host? Who is it? Now let's turn to the interview that I've been kind of really looking forward to the last couple of days. It's a very articulate activist who has his finger on a number of issues, more broadly based than myself. And he's sometimes a little too conservative for my taste, but he's a very savvy guy.
And I'm talking about Fred Geiger. Hi, Fred.
Hello there, Robert. I'll try to live up to my introduction there.
And Fred, how long have you been active on the Santa Cruz political scene here?
Well, I was active around the Lighthouse Field Days, and then I sort of got out of the local political scene until about 3.5-4 years ago.
Now, Lighthouse Field, that was early 70s. That's when Catherine Byers was actually an activist.
I don't remember too much. It was basically the Lighthouse Field folks that I was involved with. I think she did get involved with them eventually.
Librarian as activist, and then finally turns into a consummate bureaucrat. But that's my view, of course, not necessarily yours. You helped elect the current city council, kicking out the proteges of Rotkin, Kennedy, and so forth. I guess it was Steinau, Quartararo, and Walton were the main opponents. Are you happy with the three council members, Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar?
Well, I'm happy, yeah. I mean, I'm happy that they're in there. I'm hoping that they'll be able to do more of the things that I think they want to do in the near future. And, they're not always going to be able to do everything they want to do as soon as they want to do it, but I'm definitely happy that they're there and the other people aren't, that's for sure.
Well, you know, it's interesting, that argument about the lesser of the two evils, or, you know, at least we didn't get Hitler, instead we got, George Bush. I mean, I don't know, the argument that somehow the Clinton is better than the alternative, the Republican alternative, often, you know, kind of returns to bite us on the butt when Clinton moves to do things that the Republicans could never do, like dismantle the welfare net, or LBJ moves to involve the country in a ground war in Asia, which Barry Goldwater could never have done because the Democrats in Congress would have foiled him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really an interesting question whether, and Willie Brown, for instance, gets a majority in San Francisco, so now there are no voices, or very few, against his oppression of homeless people up there. Similarly, up in, you know, we find that it seems like Fitzmaurice, Crone, and Sugar have all lined up behind Catherine Byers and the Byers sleeping ban, as I've called it, her law, which she passed in March of last year, March 23rd, which criminalizes sleeping between 11 and 8:30, criminalizes covering up with blankets. What's your take on that?
Well, I'm hoping that the process is still open. I've heard that it is. I mean, there's supposed to be an ongoing thing. I think the conservative business community was very effective at coming up with a big barrage against these newly elected people when they, you know, hadn't really got their feet under them yet, deluging them rather than diluting them probably too, with hundreds of phone calls and letters, making it appear that there was this big group of persons, and I heard they even were saying they were their supporters, which I very much doubt that there were that many of their supporters in that category, you know, that were opposed to any change whatsoever in the homeless laws and the downtown association. I thought it was kind of funny. They were virtually hysterical and tearing their hair out, even though there weren't really any proposals that would have affected them. The car camping proposal that was mainly what was on the table was not to apply to their own areas. So somebody got a lot of people really worked up and sandbagged these newly electeds, and I think scared Catherine. And I hope ultimately, when this process finally works itself through, I hope that that all four of the council majority will see really you know, where things are at as far as their supporters and the majority of the voters in Santa Cruz, how they feel on this issue.
Well, you know, you take a more sanguine view than I. I mean, I think that somebody that got these folks worked up was that very woman, Catherine Byers, our mayor, who, instead of dealing with the limited sleeping ban issue as it was presented to voters last year, endorsed by SCAN 3 years running, endorsed by WILP, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, the Peace and Freedom Party, the Green Party, the Community Action Board, this resolution that said, let homeless people sleep somewhere legally in Santa Cruz, and we'll worry about the whole camping thing later, but in the meantime, let's deal with the human rights issue of sleeping. Byers, instead of dealing with this issue, frightened the residential and business community by announcing that she was going to examine the entire camping ordinance. And there are, well, most of us believe, I think, who have been looking at this process, she had no serious intention of examining the camping ordinance at all. In fact, that isn't what she did at all. All she did was she raised a specter that frightened a lot of conservatives, who then came and expressed essentially a lot of irrelevant concerns, because, as you point out, the council had no intention of making, even examining the very serious substantive issue of sleeping for the homeless somewhere, which would not be in residential areas or downtown
business
areas.
Well, I don't think
areas.
She intentionally did that, Robert. That may have been, in fact, what happened, and if so, it apparently is part of what happened. It's unfortunate. I don't think that, I'm not willing to say that she intentionally did that because she really didn't want to do anything. I think she really wants to have a participation by the public. I think she really was impressed by the whole outcry from the community over the beach plan and all the various bad parts of the beach plan, where she now wants to make sure that anything that's done has a lot of public dialogue and wide public support. So I'm not saying that, you know, more shouldn't be done, but I don't want to say that she had any kind of a conscious diversionary tactic up her sleeve, because I really don't think that's what happened.
Well, I mean, I guess the reason that I'm severely skeptical about this, I mean, one has to regard her as either intentional or inept, because the issue at hand was not the camping ordinance. The issue at hand was the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance. And that was the issue that was constantly pressed in the debates between the opposing candidates throughout the election season. That was an issue that was supported by SCAN, the organization that essentially endorsed her and every other victorious candidate for the last decade. It was the sleeping ban, not the camping ordinance.
Leave out Mike Hernandez, please.
with the exception, the honorable exception, if we want to be honorable in some respects, of Michael Hernandez, who has been accused of some of being the prime coconut on the council, and I don't wish to comment on that comment at this time, other than to endorse it. However, again, getting back to Byers, I mean, when she originally... she... What I noticed was there was not a single shelter proposal arose during the winter. The issue was delayed throughout the winter when it had a lot of steam, because people were concerned about folks who were cold and outside. She kept telling everybody, we're going to talk about this in February. Then in February, on February 1st, she declared that she had made up her mind before the legal discussion began. She wasn't even going to discuss the sleeping sections of the camping ordinance. She had simply decided she wanted to lower the fines. Now, to me, if this isn't a put-up job, it's a pretty shameful surrender. And I don't know, I mean, you know, I guess it's, you know, I've criticized the mayor quite clearly and repeatedly on the issue.
That's pretty clear, I'd say.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it has to be done because people are suffering because of her either intentional determination to avoid the issue or to maintain what she had said all along was her determination, was to simply to lower fines. That's what she told me she wanted to do in December of 1998. I spoke to her on the phone, and that's what she told me she was going to do in February of 1999. And the question is, why did she waste everyone's time spending 3 months running around town, and why did Crone and Sugar allow this to happen? And that, to me, is really the serious question.
Well, I'm not sure, you know, as far as allow, I mean, I think they both made motions on the council to do more than was actually done, but they didn't have the support at that time to do it. And I'm hoping that, you know, when it all settles back down as soon as possible, which is certainly I'm sure it will be before next winter, there will be more done, and that, you know, it's up to all the people who think that more should be done to get out there and, you know, lobby, contact, inform, argue, et cetera, so that when we get this business back deluge again, that there'll be a counter to that, because I don't think that was really in place before, and I think it sort of scared and intimidated this new majority. It's like the Clinton healthcare thing. When he first got elected, he wanted to do something good and sort of jumped into a boiling pool and, you know, didn't work out. It was overwhelming, and he wasn't prepared for it at that time.
That's true, but you see, you're picking examples, and I tend to be skeptical and concerned that you may be, eager to protect candidates that you endorsed and would like to believe are going to do something good, and that's a very natural and human thing. But we've got to look at the actual behavior of Sugar and Crone. And while they did, at certain points, almost in an erratic sort of scattershot, spontaneous fashion, make some good resolutions that failed, mainly because they weren't properly prepared, mainly because they didn't mobilize a constituency. No time throughout that period did any of them advocate for any of these issues in a consistent and clear public way that would have made the community understand what was going on and also put pressure on Catherine to actually do the right thing. I want to point out to you that they didn't sit around asking the businessmen whether they should take back the tidelands. No way. They went right ahead and did that. They didn't, there are a series of issues like Terrace Point where they didn't sit around and say, gosh, let's sample the community opinion on this. No siree. They moved in to fulfill the campaign promises they had made.
Well, I think it's a good point you're making, and you're being fairly factual there, and I think the answer probably to your question, if that is a question, is that there was not a whole lot of support on the other side of either of those two issues, so therefore things went through more easily, and that's why I'm saying all the people that want there to be changes in this sleeping band need to get mobilized and need to make sure that they've got the political push there for when it comes back to the council that they're going to win this time.
But I think the point was, Fred, that I think they thought they were mobilized. They thought people like Scan and Wilp and all these groups that endorsed the sleeping band repeal and the winning candidates were going to do this thing, which at least to set up safe zones such as were authorized by the federal court in Miami, Florida. And in essence, this council betrayed them on that issue. Now, I guess what I want to look at more recently, I mean, I've talked about this on the air, and I guess people who have been following the show know this is my perspective, and they've heard me talking about it. But the Santa Cruz Action Network had its mass meeting of the year, I guess, earlier this week, and I guess I'm really concerned. I was concerned that SCAN, because it supported the resolution three years running, that the sleeping ban be repealed, and most recently that the sleeping ban repeal initiative be passed, since its endorsed council members have voted instead on March 23rd to make it criminal for people to sleep outside. That's 500 to 1,500 homeless people who have no legal place to be at night tonight. I think they should censure those people. I proposed that to Skip Spitzer. I proposed that to all these great SCAN insiders. And, not even David Silva's voice was raised to do that. And I'm really kind of concerned that what we have here is a major sellout by SCAN on this issue.
Well, that's a good point, Robert. I think that I was kind of happy to hear that SCAN has apparently, I'm not on the steering committee, haven't been for several years, but I understand that the steering committee is going to centralize their efforts on fewer issues and actually set up committees on these issues, and one of them was this the housing homelessness thing, which I know you don't like to have put together, but nevertheless, that's the basis they're tackling it on. They're going to have a committee based on these three issues that they've chosen to focus on and actually come up with specific proposals and lobby the electeds to enact these proposals. So I'm hoping that this is a good thing that
sure, but it has nothing to do with securing the rights of homeless people. Mike Rodkin has always been a big supporter of housing projects.
It should be part of this. This should be one of their proposals, and I think that it will be, and I think that everybody who believes it should also...
I mean, can't hold its own members accountable for what they're supposed to be doing. It hasn't got the guts to say, guys, we may support you on every other issue, but on this issue, you fell down, and we're going to tell you fell down.
Well,
then SCAN's word isn't worth a damn, and neither are these council people.
Let's not generalize. I mean, so let's not pick on all the council people. first of all.
Except for sugar. Okay, I will accept sugar and Crown, even though I've been critical of them, because at certain points, however fitfully, however much in isolation from other activists, they did propose things that might have resulted in the sleeping band being revealed.
Well, I think it took a lot of courage to sort of, you know, sort of an isolated position and a new person on the council to really stick their neck out like that when they probably knew that they were going to fail, but they still did it because they thought it was the right thing to do. But I'll get off of that subject because I know that's not really what you're interested in. But getting back to the scan and their efforts and what should they do, well, what apparently they're going to do is this task force sort of thing. And I think that maybe that would be a logical outcome of the task force's recommendations if they're not enacted. About a year or two ago, SCAN started carrying the voting records of the council people in their newsletter at my and many other people's urging, which I think was really good. We can actually see whether people are living up to what they say. And I think if there's obviously some kind of a gap between what people promise and what they do, then there should be some kind of actions. And actually, SCAN has considered some wording to take some kind of actions against candidates that they've supported that don't live up to their campaign promises.
Just so, not this year, not
I'm
this month, not on this issue.
I guess, but nevertheless, this was in the last, before the last election, these were being considered, and the wording is probably still there and not far from being finalized and ready to be enacted.
Well, you know, if SCAN has the will, all they have to do is raise the issue with the membership, and the membership can vote. Obviously, nobody had the will or the inclination. And we also saw this in the disgraceful letter that Skip Spitzer and Bernice Belzer sent to the city council, in essence not criticizing them in the least for failing to maintain their support for a basic law that would, you know, for overturning the law that criminalizes homeless people at night, which SCAN for 3 years has specifically, officially on record said it favors the repeal of. And when I talked to Tom SCAN, one of the
Shaver,
Tom Shaver of SCAN, he was assuring me they were going to rewrite the letter, and they had rushed this letter together, and they didn't have time, and all this thing. No second letter ever showed up. SCAN has ducked responsibility here. SCAN, and it makes me even wonder if these council members didn't just use the Beach Flats issue to get their butts into power, and now we're going to do whatever they feel like they want to do at this time. Now, tell me I'm wrong. Tell me they're doing some great things.
Well, Robert, I'm glad there's people like you out there because it helps push over things to, you know, back towards where they should be, and I'm glad you're cynical. I know it doesn't affect you, your health, mental or physical, and I'm glad of that, but I think you're a little pessimistic, and I do think that it's important for you, myself, and everyone to get involved with this SCAN process and other places.
Tell me some of the good things that they've done, Fred, in the last 5 months so I can reassure myself that I'm just an old crank here.
Well, I'd have to get the voting records out of the SCAN newsletter, and then they have a lot of the important
except
issues.
You're going to find there's not much that they voted on.
Well, they haven't done a whole lot actually yet at all. Actually, right out of the budget thing, and before that they were going back and forth with this homeless thing. So, yeah, I would have to say that I don't think a lot has been done at this point.
Well, it's very depressing. I mean, even at the last city council meeting, we saw Catherine Byers, you know, this new public participation, public input council, hold back oral communication for an hour and a half, which put disabled people like David Silva in a situation where they just couldn't wait another hour for whatever the council was going to do, and he gave up his opportunity to speak to and educate the public. I think that's very important that people be allowed that opportunity. Byers claims she wasn't going to do that again. She pulled that number in January, and now she's pulling it again.
Well, I hope that'll be raised, Robert. I think.
Hey, I've raised it. I mean,
I will mention it as a matter of fact to her very soon myself.
Slap her across the chops there.
Yeah,
which brings me to the next question. I guess I brought this issue up on the air, Fred. Now, I'm wondering if you can give me your thoughts. We are having a call-in contest to see who is most worthy of a pie. Yes. Now, what is your... I mean, who do you feel really best suits that definition?
You know, I guess I've just gotten out of the spirit, Robert. Before the election, I would have been flinging pies every which way, but I went down and blasted a couple of some of the ex and current council members pretty good on the air there at the council.
Oh, you were great, Fred.
Maybe I worked it out in my system, but I just don't feel that degree of hostility at the moment.
Wow.
Maybe I'm just tired. I got a little cold. I've been working all day.
Oh, we're all
so I'll have
weather.
To pass on that vote, but I like your idea, though.
any issues coming up, Fred, that you think we should keep our eyes on, that you think are important, that the council needs to be kicked in the butt on?
Transportation You're talking housing, so obviously we're recognizing that. But I think this is a big turning point for transportation in Santa Cruz. We've had a beach plan that proposed two large parking structures down in the beach area, which would suck more traffic through town, if that's possible. As a matter of fact, I don't even know if it's possible, but they're going to try. We got the university once they had 3,500 traffic-inducing parking spaces up at the university. By the way, they're first of all starting with the multi-level parking structure that costs $29,000 per space for the professors only, but the students' parking fees are going to go up about $100-something a year to help subsidize these spaces. But the big point I'm trying to make here is that we need to change our way of thinking as far as how we get around in this town. Building more parking structures in the middle of already crowded areas is only going to bring in more traffic. And this is the time to stop and say, let's do some remote parking. We've got a rail line that runs from the Harvey West area adjacent to the freeway. It's right next to our downtown and down to our beach area. And right up the hill from there is the university that's scheduled to grow to 15,000 students and will probably have at least 5,000 or 6,000 employees and staff. So I'm really hoping that the people in Santa Cruz are willing to say, look, you know, we're not going to just do the same old system here. We want to get some things going. We want to get some more efficient transportation systems, and we're willing to stick our neck out, work, and make some changes. This is going to change the whole character of this town.
You know, another thing that I guess I want to, I know you got to go because you have an appointment you have to get to.
Right,
but
sure.
In 1990, I'm sure you were around noticing that, you know, for months and months, people demonstrated by the thousands at the mere prospect of a war in the Middle East. Now we have a daily bombing of Yugoslavia happening, and yesterday at the town clock I saw like 40 to 50 people, and of course before that there was just a trickle, a tinkle. Even Resource Center for Nonviolence wasn't returning its calls, according to Phil Baer, on this issue until a week ago or so. I mean, has the American conscience gone to sleep if Santa Cruzans don't give a damn if Yugoslavians are being bombed
into
submission?
Well, I think I'm on the opposite side of that issue from you, Robert. I mean, you know, at what point is violence justified? I mean, you know, you've got a Hitler over there. He's caused the death of literally thousands or tens of thousands of unarmed civilians, tortures, rapes.
Now, you have a source there for that? That's an important, that's a serious statement.
Thousands
or tens of thousands of unarmed civilians. I will expect next show to you to call me in and give me the specific source that shows me that. I'd like to discuss that with you.
Follow the newspapers for about
I read them regularly.
And I know you have. And, you know, I understand that you can't always believe everything you read, but
Find me the answer. Look up that particular, if you can find that stat, the thousands upon thousands of unarmed civilians killed by the Hitler in Yugoslavia, Milosevic. I want those stats, and I'll talk about it on the air on Sunday.
That'd be interesting. Well,
give me a call.
Get them that soon, but I think it'd be worthwhile to give you that information because I believe that it.
I want that information.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you have your world court thing in Holland. They've indicted people on you know, these concentration camp charges, murders, rapes, and they've convicted them.
Except they haven't indicted the president of Croatia, who did the ethnic cleansing of 600,000 Serbs in 1990.
Actually, they have indicted some Croatians, though, which...
But not the president of the country.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'm just saying that
right.
There has been some real savage brutality on both sides, but in the situation in Kosovo
Is bombing helping? Bombing helping is my question.
Well, I hope it does in the end. That's all I can say. But I really feel like it's just like if you're the biggest guy in the neighborhood and you see, you know, some kid kicking some other kid in the head while he's lying down on the ground, and you can just go say, that's their problem.
Or do you bomb the entire neighborhood? That's the question.
Grab
that makes
kid
sense.
And pull him off and say, hey, you know, whatever it takes, I'm going to stop.
Well, pulling off somebody is one thing. Bombing the entire community is another. I don't know. You know, I mean, it's... But I definitely want to take... I mean, I'm glad that we have a different point of view here. You can bring me some evidence and some information later on that. And we've been talking to Fred Geiger, a community activist, a union... Would you call yourself a union leader, or would you call a union rebel, perhaps?
Yes, I'm still rebellious. I guess I'm still a little rebellious, Robert.
I'm glad to hear it. Well, listen, Fred, thank you very much, and please join us again if you can on Sunday with anything and everything. Particularly, I think this Kosovo situation is going to be heating up. The university community had about 1,000 people two nights ago in the teach-in, and they were... I mean, there was disagreement, but everybody generally agreed the bombing was a bad idea.
I think people need to look into the situation and really see what, you know.
Give us some of the facts that lead you to why you think the bombing is a good thing when you call us again.
Uh-huh. All right, Robert. You take care.
Thank you, Fred.
Catch you.
Bye-bye.
There's a sunny little country south of Mexico, where the winds are gentle and the waters low. But breezes aren't the only things that blow in El Salvador. If you took the little lady for a moonlight drive, odds are still good you'd come back alive. But everyone is innocent until they're right in El Salvador. If the rebels take a bus on the Grand Highway, the government destroys a village miles away, the man on the rail says, now we'll play south of the border. And in the morning the natives say, we're happy you have lived another day. Last night a thousand more passed away in El Salvador. Television crew here from ABC, filming Rio Lampa and the refugees, calling murdered children the tragedy of El Salvador. Before the government camera 20 feet away, another man is asking for continued aid, food and medicine and hand grenades for El Salvador. There's a thump, a rumble, and the buildings sway. A soldier fires the acid spray. The public address system starts to play south of the border. You run for cover and hide your eyes. You hear the screams for paradise. They've fallen further than you realize that El Salvador. Protected by her Russian friends, Hunter is assisted by Americans. And if $60 million seems too much to spend in El Salvador, they say for $500 million they could do it right. Bomb all day and burn all night until there's not a living thing upright in El Salvador. They'll continue training troops in the USA and watch the nuns that got away and teach the military bands to play south of the border and kill the people to set them free who put this price on their liberty. Don't you think it's time to leave El Salvador?
That was Peter, Paul, and Mary, Salvador from the mid-80s, not too long a jump to the late 90s, and Yugoslavia. But on the phone, we have that perennial rebel, Uncle Bob LaMonica. Hi, Bob.
Robert, how you doing?
I'm good, and if you're not browbeating us for defending the, I guess, the Serbian people, you're attacking us for...
I think a sincere examination of the Santa Cruz Action Network in context with local politics, I think, is very sincere. And I would hope to be able to raise that issue. And
sure.
We can talk about this a little bit with some clarity.
Any issue.
You bet. So, I mean, SCAN, to expect SCAN to take on something revolutionary, something significant, I think is not in the cards. And I don't think it's been in the cards since its inception.
Mm-hmm.
I think possibly in its inception, and certainly 15 years ago, maybe. I think at this point in time, SCAN is establishment, which is why they're going the task force route, because all this stuff waters down accountability.
Yeah.
It passes the buck. So when the Santa Cruz Action Network goes the route of task forces, I think it should communicate something to the citizenry of the community. And also the power of the steering committee versus the power of the number of the members, who, according to you, have supported the sleeping ban 3 years in a row, repeal?
Yeah, repealing it, yeah. No question of that.
Now, so one has to ask, well, in this instance alone, why hasn't the issue been addressed full bore by the Santa Cruz Action Network? It's been avoided because it's a hot potato.
Well, the issue has been addressed in the sense that they have supported, I guess they helped mail out some of the sleeping ban repeal literature. They actually were very tepid and limited in the amount of actual organizational support they gave to those doing signature drive for the repeal initiative last year. But, you know, the votes at the mass membership meetings were quite significant. There was, you know, I mean, there were strong votes in favor of ending the sleeping ban. It's just, I think the inner circle, you know, I think Bernice had on the inner circle is, although I've taken issue with her for her kind of tepid statements at city council, what I regard as tepid, similarly with Skip Spitzer, I still feel that I've seen them, you know, coming to organizational meetings, really trying to do something at different times. So I as individuals, I guess people do one thing. The question is, as an organization, I think you have this boggy, foggy, smoggy stuff that happens where people, well, as I said, I think SCAN sold out the community on the sleeping ban and in not holding the city council responsible for its latest human rights violation, the law of March 23rd. You know, they abandon their moral authority on this issue completely.
As a neophyte observer of SCAN, going back to the early 90s at least, and talking to others about even the 80s, I don't think that one can expect, nor is there any precedent for the Santa Cruz Action Network taking a bold position on anything. And in recent memory, there are several issues that come to the surface and need to be, that could have been dealt with had the organization been other than, I'm not saying it's bad to be establishment, okay, to work task forces and all this kind of stuff and to develop liaisons for low-income housing, and this stuff is good in its sense, but it is not bold politics. And in that context, an issue like repealing the sleeping ban portions of the camping ordinance are, as expressed by the track record, are not within the bounds of what the Santa Cruz Action Network wants to take on officially.
Well, if they didn't want to take it on, they shouldn't have voted for it. They voted for it for 3 years, as far as I'm concerned, and they have to hold the members that they endorse accountable on that issue. And if they don't do that, they aren't worth shit. That's my bottom line on SCAN.
It was minimal, and it was appearances.
Yeah, I think so. I think that that's the truth.
And it speaks to the whole of a lot of politics in our time as to what do we expect from those that are empowered. Should they be bold with their positions, or should they be tepid and expect for task forces and committees to, over the course of months and years, eventually bring issues to them that are safe? If we take only safe positions, we're not really being much leaders, are we?
I think you've got that one pretty pat there, Bob.
So, I mean, those, I could go on, but those are my comments. I think that this is a serious issue, and if somebody wants to be a member of SCAN, I think fine, but it is not, it cannot be considered to be bold by the wildest stretch, just 90s politics here in Santa Cruz. It does not take on bold issues, and I would be more than happy to be proved wrong.
Me too.
I've never seen it.
Well, thank you for calling, Bob, and let's hope that thunder hits and lightning strikes.
Take care, Robert.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm your inimitable host, Robert Norse, and we are going to be shortly going into our second hour. The call-in number here, in case you wish to join this discussion, is 427-3772. We're also looking for your vote on who is the most pieable Santa Cruzan, and you can give a call with that vote to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Who most deserves a pie in the eye, if anyone? Of course, you could take the position of at least two close supporters of Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, or at least the Committee to Repeal the Sleeping Ban, who said that pieing is undignified, violent, counterproductive. We've had that discussion before. But, hey, that's you can also make that vote, too. Do give your vote, though, so we can get a certain sense of what the community is up to. Or, as Christopher Crone said, achieve some sort of a community input here. I have here a Kosovo update. That's been kind of coming up in recent days, not just because bombs have been falling in increasing numbers over populated centers in Yugoslavia, as well as huge numbers of refugees being created in Kosovo through the action of Serbian authorities and the bombings as well, although I can't really give a percentage on that. Here's Becky Johnson's update on this. On April 13th, a Kosovo refugee convoy was hit by an airstrike and 64 people were killed. NATO top brass first says we're still investigating. The signs are not typical of NATO bombs. They're more typical of Serbian bombs. Maybe even the Serbs bombed them. Today, however, NATO apologizes for the bombing when the pilot confesses, quote, I thought they were a band of Serbian military forces going from village to village, burning them out and raping the women. I fixed my target on a lead vehicle, which I thought was a tank. It was a tractor. NATO now says, quote, accidents will happen. What 64 people? We're defending a million people. NATO airstrikes continue bombing factories, bridges, and other NATO-determined military targets. Not limited to military targets, basic infrastructure for the general populace is also being destroyed. On April 13th, local Santa Cruz resident Shana Lavarovic reported her daughter's grammar school in Serbia had been destroyed by bombs. Pentagon officials, meanwhile, beg for and get more billions from Congress. Said one general, at the rate we are going, all our ammo will be gone by 2015. Time to stock up, boys. That same Republican-controlled Congress refused to send aid to Central America for relief from Hurricane Mitch unless funds for welfare mothers and children were cut correspondingly. Earlier this week, a train crossing a river was destroyed by an American pilot flying for NATO. At first, Pentagon sources claimed the train was carrying Serbian troops and hence a legitimate military target. But on April 14th, the pilot claimed the target had been the bridge and he'd only seen the train in the last seconds. Pentagon spokesmembers again chided those who protest that, quote, accidents involving civilians who are killed is inevitable. And that is more or less the update from my producer, Becky Johnson, who has been videotaping protests and in spite of her sick condition, we're all a little sick around the studio here, making her way down to the town clock where there was a protest at noon yesterday. And the day before that, there was, as I said, 500 to 1,000 people, a lot of people, in Stevenson on UCSC campus. And a big debate, or I should say a panel discussion, in which almost everyone agreed that the bombing was counterproductive and or either counterproductive or utterly immoral and murderous and shouldn't be continued. There was some dissent on this disagreement on a number of other issues as to exactly what the motivation was. You know, are there white hats and black hats in this particular struggle and what's going on? There was a Free Radio Santa Cruz reporter at the town clock yesterday when about 40 or 50 protesters showed up. I guess some say the number was more like 100. I didn't think so. I thought it was less. But let's move to a tape of that particular event from yesterday.
So it's about 1:35 on April 14th, Wednesday afternoon, at the town clock in the afternoon. We're talking to Becky Johnson. And Becky, you're here at this one of three or four tables. Your table is just concerned with the homeless?
Yeah, we're here. We're still trying to end the sleeping ban. And we've set up a table here, although most of the people that are here are, the primary issue people are here is the bombing in Kosovo. And this group resulted from a teach-in that took place up at Stevenson College last night, attended by, I would say there were 1,000 people that attended that teach-in, and we have a large showing. I counted about 10 minutes ago there were 50 people, and it's at least doubled since then in the number of people that are here. Over here at the next table is Adios Camp, which is...
Hang on.
So we have Adios Camp over here because...
I'm going to interrupt this tape to give this somewhat belated announcement that tonight, even as we speak, 7 p.m. at the Vets Hall, Women in Prison is having a kind of a benefit forum with speakers Ida Robinson of Families of the Future, Ekua Emusup, Cabrillo College lecturer. Also at 7, starting now, for those of you who have cable television, Channel 71 has a repeat show done about a year ago with Ida Robinson as a guest, and April is Prison Awareness Month. At 7:30, going to 8:30, there will be the Voices from the Village show on Cable 71, our local community television, Kosovo, Evolution of a Disaster, and the call-in number for that is 425-4920, with calls accepted beginning around 10 to 8. That's 7:30 to 8:30, Voices from the Village on Cable Channel 71. Then We Listen, or the Welfare and Low Income Support Network, is having its 25th silent anniversary silent auction and dessert party Friday, April 30th from 6 p.m. to 8:30 at Unity Temple's Harmony Hall at 407 Broadway. It's $5 to $10. That's again April 30th. We Listen, Welfare Low Income Support Network's 25th anniversary. $5 to $10 sliding scale, donation at the door. Give a call to 458-9070 if you want more details. And they're a good group. They used to be called the Welfare Parents Support Group. Before that, they were called the Welfare Moms Support Group. They are a support group for folks who need support, and we all need support. Keep that in mind. So again, 7 p.m. at the Vets Hall tonight. If you want to turn off the radio or take it with you and head on down there and check out Women in Prison, you can do that. Or you can turn on your TV at the same time. Make sure you keep your radio on one ear. You can listen to the TV with the other. And check out Prison Awareness Show with Ida Robinson as a guest, 7:30 tonight to 8:30, Voices from the Village. Kosovo, Evolution of a Disaster. There you can ask the questions and see if... Or give them your statistics that there are tens of thousands or thousands of deaths caused by the dictator of Yugoslavia. I have not seen the backing for that, and I've seen a lot of dispute about that, and I'd like to have all you gung-ho warbirds to call in and let us know what the real facts are. Read us the stats. Let's educate ourselves here. And now let's get back to this demonstration yesterday at the town clock.
The Board of Supervisors are considering accepting that grant again to have helicopters searching over the county of Santa Cruz looking for peaceful little gardens. And so that'll be on 420. That's right, April 20th, that hearing will be. And so they're encouraging people to show up for that. And then at the table behind you, Robert, is set up for to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. And, of course, there's a large rally going on in San Francisco on April 24th. They're trying to organize for that. So a number of different groups have come together. Of course, it's all the same issue, Robert. You know, the reason the homeless don't have homes is because we're spending all our money making sure that the Serbians don't have homes either.
Thank you, Becky. All right, here we have an individual shaking some orange juice. What are you doing down here at the town clock today?
We are protesting the bombing of Serbia, the NATO bombing.
Now, wait a minute. Are you referring to the bombing of the vicious criminal genocidal government of dictator Milosevic?
Where do you get that information?
The U.S. media.
Of course. Do you believe everything they tell you?
Uh-huh. Well, that's one opinion. And what are you doing here, sir?
I'm here because... I think that U.S. government has never done anything for humanitarian reasons, so why would they this time? And I feel it's not humanitarian anyways, no matter how they say it, because millions of people are getting killed anyways.
Millions of people are getting killed? I thought 2,000 have been killed as of the outbreak of the bombing.
Yeah.
Something like that. That was the...
I got millions from me on my mind. That's why I only said that.
I got you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, and now we're talking to
Simon from England.
And Simon, what brings you to this rally?
I believe in the same cause. We have demonstrations in London at the moment, so just thought I'd join in. And
what is this cause?
This cause is to stop the bombing in Serbia.
How are you going to stop the ethnic massacres?
How are you going to stop it? It's a big question. How can you stop it? Clinton thought you could stop it by bombing. You know, some other people think different things.
Most people agree that it can't be stopped by bombing, the State Department accepted. But what solution do you propose?
I don't really have a solution, you know. I just don't agree with the bombing. and loads of people being killed.
Thank you. Anything you want to add, Sam?
No, you're okay.
All right, so you're a honky for peace here. You're standing here with your honk for peace sign.
I'm honking for peace.
And what is your name?
Kristen Dorzewski.
And Kristen, what brings you to this town clock today?
I think that we should stop the violence in Yugoslavia.
Well, how are you going to stop the Serbian forces from perpetrating their violence?
With peace talks, real peace talks. Peace talks that just don't demand all of what the U.S. wants with NATO troops. I don't think that a leader should be demanded to have 30,000 NATO troops in his country.
So are you suggesting that the Serbian dictator, or leader, if you will, Milosevic, is not the same caliber of, let's say, Hitler or some of that
sort? Definitely. I think he's been totally slandered in the news. I don't doubt that there might be some violence for the Albanians, but I think there was just as much violence in the past on the Serbian people by the KLA and by other Albanians, and it's a civil war that we shouldn't put our nose in.
Well, we've heard it said that the Croatian president has been somewhat harsh with the Serbians in Croatia. How do you propose that that situation be rectified?
With the Croatian president?
Yeah.
With who?
Well, in 1995, we were told at the teach-in last night, the Croatian president, Tadjuk, expelled 600,000 Serbians and indulged in numerous murders at that time, actually in forces armed and supported by the U.S. and indeed the CIA.
Right.
Would you support allowing this dictator to remain in power? I mean, what's to be done about that situation? I'm posing some hard questions for you.
I don't know. You know, I think my main stance is that I don't think that we've had fair peace talks. And I think it can be worked out without bombing a country and ruining the country. And for instance, last night we bombed a whole convoy of Albanians that NATO confirmed this morning, so it's not even like we're bombing for the right people anymore.
Well, won't by peace talks, the cry was used, for example, in 1991 when Yugoslavian central government had an opportunity to crush the Slovenian and Croatian secession movements. Germany asked for peace talks. 3 months later, republics were well-armed and seceded. Don't you feel that stop peace talks at this point with Serbia might allow the Serbian government a chance to get even more arms from Russia and other allies?
No, because I don't think that they've been fair peace talks from the beginning.
Well, even if they've been unfair, wouldn't a new opportunity provide the aggressors, or let's even say the participants, a chance to rearm themselves?
Possibly, but that's the risk you take, I guess, if you want peace. If you want to try to work peace.
And you indeed are saying honk for peace.
Yes, I'm saying honk for peace.
I'll honk for that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
So, which side is the Sentinel on in this particular controversy?
Good question.
You think the Sentinel will be covering this story today? Or?
I'm here.
That's true. I thought you might be here as a private citizen. All right. That was the Sentinel reporter, Bill Lovejoy.
NATO's bombing, let's go!
Hey, hey! Ho, ho!
NATO's bombing, let's go!
Hey, hey! Ho, ho!
NATO bombing, let's go!
Hey, hey!
NATO bombing, let's go!
Hey, hey! All right, you're standing up here with your sign, call the White House. What good will that do?
What good will that do? Then the president knows what the people are thinking. The more the people call, the more he'll think that it's not good to.
The president cares what the people are thinking.
One of the things we learned from the Vietnam War is that public opinion is just as good, as important as to winning the war than anything else. And that if you don't have public opinion behind you, and if people don't support you, then the war is going to be lost no matter what.
So is calling the White House going to increase public opinion against bombing, do you think?
No, but to let them know what the public's thinking.
Yeah, because he doesn't even know. Like, he's just doing his own thing, and, like, people just don't know what they're thinking about it, and he doesn't hear. And the more he hears, like, he'll think, oh, he's on bad standing with the people, and then...
I think that spending $2 that you spend on calling the White House on making 50 signs might be a better idea, or making 30 local calls to other people in the town might be more worthwhile. That's just my view.
Yeah, well, I think so, too, but I think, like... who's the top, though? He's, like, the top, and, like, he should know. He should know what people think.
It's good to make people feel that because people are just passing by in their cars. I mean, they have to be able to do something. They're just going to go home, and they're going to say, okay, well, maybe the bombing's bad or something like that. But they've got to, I mean, if they call the White House, I mean, it's just something simple that they can do that'll help.
Your view?
And if he gets, like, so many of the population, like, calling him, he can't do anything but change how he's acting, I think.
You dreamer, you.
Yeah, I'm a dreamer.
Well, thank you very much.
No problem. Thank you.
So the demonstrators, about 20, 30, maybe 40 strong, are beginning to march through town with violence not a solution, stop the bombing, honk for peace, about to take off and give out flyers. And no evidence of genocide. Call the White House. That's that sign we've noticed before. And this, of course, is a considerably smaller protest than we saw in terms of the number of people at the teach-in last night. What do you think is the reason for this reduction of numbers?
I think because it's harder to go somewhere, like, than just on campus, and it's harder to show. Instead of, a lot of the people don't know what they think and don't know if they want them. Think that the bombing might actually be a good thing, and a lot of the people that went to the teach-in were actually very excited when somebody else said, like, well, the bombing's kind of okay, and the, you know, the U.S. is like doing what it should do.
Well, I noticed last night at the teach-in, were you there for the entire teach-in?
No, I was there for about after 30 minutes. Yeah.
I know that almost no one opposed the bombing, but some people felt it was a civil war and had a different view as to the extent of U.S. imperialist involvement. There was a kind of, like, a difference of opinion, but I think almost everybody... I didn't hear one speaker propose the bombing continue, did you?
That the bombing continue?
Yeah.
No, but... the reasons that they give, like, make people think that, well, maybe they shouldn't stop it then, and, like, it leads to kind of apathy as opposed to doing something about it.
So it's about 1:50, a march of 20, 25 people has turned on Cooper, I should say, on Soquel Avenue after marching up Pacific, and now is returning to the direction of Town Clock on Front Street. Very beautiful weather, probably one of our first warm days in a while. Some people are interested to take the flyers. About a third of the people do not. And it's... a lot of people are honking, though, so there seems to be some support for ending the bombing. And I was just informed by Dan Hopkins, homeless activist, who's been covering this matter. Well, it's about 2 o'clock. We're back at the town clock, and we're talking to... that notorious man about camp. What is it? A campaign to... Woman about camp. Apologies.
That's all right, Robert.
Mary Jane Stern. My gender orientation is somewhat bizarre.
Male or female name.
That's true. That's true. I can understand.
This person about camp is...
just looking.
This babe about camp has this to say.
Ooh! Now you're getting sexist, sir, Robert.
You can't win.
You know, I was here, you know, also to support the stopping of the bombing of the Balkans, and but the war also is happening right here at home, and the war is being fought against our own people, and it's the drug war, and we've got 480,000 people in federal and state prisons, you know, around the country, and more people are going into prison all the time, and prisons are increasing. The number of prison cells are increasing. So we're going to be pretty soon the largest incarcerated population of any place in the world.
And what's coming up that people can do to fight the drug prohibition war?
Well, on the local front here in Santa Cruz County, on April the 20th, 420, the sheriff is proposing the camp grant before the Board of Supervisors. And we want to get as many people there to also protest the and to stop the...
Sheriff Mark Curfew for the young Tracy?
That's it. That's the man.
Uh-huh.
So it's going to be about $250,000 to fly the military helicopters around Santa Cruz County to invade people's privacy.
Well, it's good training for those Yugoslavian low-incoming raids.
Possibly. That's right. These guys do fly low. And they do hassle a lot of people who aren't even growing pot.
Well, this is something you've been doing for how long now?
Oh, this probably, let's see, originally, I'd say about 1991 is when I first started becoming aware of these helicopters.
And how long have the helicopters been flying to
harass and surveil folks growing marijuana?
Growing up since about 1985. So they've been doing it for a good 15 years.
And has there been a change in this policy in the last few years?
Yes, there has. The sheriff has agreed through the support of a lot of people who came to these hearings. He has agreed to reduce the number of flights from about 160 hours down to 60 hours a year. But still, he's still flying 60 hours up there.
Is he asking to increase the number, or what's the story?
We don't know. We have not heard that yet. We have actually very little information about this, and we're going to try to postpone the hearing because we have so little information. We don't even have the report or the statistics from last year as to how many people he busted.
Well, certainly your stalwart supervisor, Marty Wormhout, is leading the charge and demanding information of all sorts from the Sheriff's Department.
That's right. And I think what she's going to do next Tuesday, when this is before the board, she's going to ask. Well, she's doing all right. She's our main supporter.
We've been trying to get her to get information from the Sheriff's Department about the homeless and the right of the homeless to sleep in the county. She has done diddly squat since one request to Sheriff Tracy, I think, a month and a half ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she does tend to
favor the upper middle class.
Probably, yeah. Probably. I would say that people who are disenfranchised are people who probably don't vote. She's less concerned with. I think she's looking at her political
covering her upper white middle class fanny, so to speak.
Yes, I would say. Yeah.
Well, that's more than she could do for homeless people's fannies when she was mayor of Santa Cruz. She actually arrested people at the same spot where we are standing, the town clock. Her police and essentially her city council continued to criminalize sleeping and feeding homeless people during her regime. And I, of course, like to think of her as being a person who's changed her politics, but I've observed, unfortunately, no change in the last few months around the right for people to sleep. She refused to come out and endorse restoration of human rights in Santa Cruz for the homeless or in the county. She did make one attempt to call the sheriff, and we asked her about it 4 weeks later. She said, well, we've got to give him time to respond. I suspect that, I was going to suggest she try sleeping or not sleeping for 4 weeks while waiting for that Sheriff Mark Tracy to figure out side of the pants to wear. I don't know which.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. It's disappointing because Marty Wormhout, I think, is our one hope, on the board, if any changes are going to be made along those lines.
Right.
But we don't know how Tony Campos is going to vote. He's also a question mark about whether he'll vote for these camp funds or not.
I see. Well, thank you both. And April 20th, I guess, is the day to keep mark on your calendar to go
that
to the board of
4:20, Robert.
Supervisors.
4:20, 9 a.m.
9 a.m. Thank you very much, guys.
And that was an interview with Andrea Tischler, Becky Johnson, and numerous others at yesterday's rally against the bombing at the town clock. Also, a rally against the helicopters, which are coming up next Tuesday at the board of supervisors at. Actually, it's not at 4:20 in the afternoon, but it's on April 20th, which, fittingly enough, is Hitler's birthday for all you history buffs. I actually wrote a flyer about the bombing. It's not really about the bombing. It ties in the bombing with our own internal refugees, and I don't know if I'll read all of it because it's stuff you're aware of, but while U.S. bombs devastate Yugoslavia, what about our own homeless refugees? 500 to 1,500 homeless people remain criminal each night if they fall asleep or cover up with blankets after 11. City Council reaffirmed and reinstituted the sleeping and blanket bans on March 23rd by passing the Buyers Not in Our Backyard bills. There is no legal shelter for 95% of our homeless community, and the act of sleeping at night remains illegal. New police sweeps are expected as the weather warms. The Buyers Council continues to take no action on shelter space, a campground, bathrooms, or restoring civil rights to the poor downtown. Sit near a shop, get a ticket, ask for a dime after dark, go to jail. Where can homeless people sleep safely at night? There's really nowhere, according to Mayor Buyers on February 18th at her task force to examine the camping ordinance meeting. So I think we might want to take the mayor at her word and help to create Nowheresville. An extremely low-income answer to a city council that criminalizes sleep for the poor. And if you want to do that, You can contact HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, at 423-HUF. And if you do that, don't forget to give us your vote for the most pieable politician in Santa Cruz.
Downtown Santa Cruz, talking to Dennis Ream. And Dennis, you've got still got your vehicle. I know. I noticed you've been you were, of course, parked safely for a while at Salvation Army parking lot until they began renovations there. Have you been able to find any safe places to park your vehicle at night in church parking lots?
No, I haven't. Not yet.
Have you asked different churches?
I haven't checked with any churches yet, because they say at City Council you can only have 3 days to park somewhere.
No, that's only 3 days in a driveway. Churches you can park any length of time, and business lots any length of time.
Oh, they were unclear about that at the City Council, so I thought it was just 3 days, so I didn't really want to bother to spend my make it a full-time job trying to search for places to park.
There were some confusing bits of information come out of it, but it is only the three-day limit only applies to parking in a driveway at a residential neighborhood.
Oh, good. Now I'll check with some churches then.
And businesses, too. Because as of April 22nd, it will be legal to, for me?
No.
Just trying to get the flowers. Anyway, so you have in your hand a statement, looks like it's almost word perfect, a neater penmanship that I've seen in many a moon. And I remember you're speaking before City Council. You're a man who lives in your vehicle. Your vehicle is your home, or my car is my home, leave me alone, as it comes to mind. And you've been kind of in Santa Cruz for how long?
Since 95, steadily.
And you were an outspoken advocate of decriminalizing sleep for homeless people at the task force to examine the camping ordinance hearings.
Yes, I was. I appeared at all city council meetings and gave my 2 minutes, or 3 minutes as it was given to us to say what I needed to say in regards to what I believed these ordinances should or should not be.
And you actually are, I guess, you're preparing an address to the court for a ticket you got and were convicted of getting for sleeping in your vehicle when, I guess, A, you were not sleeping, B, you shouldn't have been ticketed even if you were sleeping, and C, you don't intend to pay that ticket. As you understand it, you're going to challenge them to take you to jail. Is that right?
That's exactly what I'm going to do. I can't consciously, in good conscience, pay for this ticket.
Well, what do you intend to tell the court?
Well, exactly what I intend to say is I'll go up and talk to the judge, and I'll let him know that there's, with no due disrespect for himself intended, but with all due disrespect for this unjust law. Okay, here we go. No, I've not paid my fine for this ticket. I cannot afford to. And if I could, I would still not pay it, based on the fact that this ordinance is an unjust violation of human rights. I could not in good conscience pay a ticket for sleeping, not camping as it is disguised, for it would, for me, be a violation of my heartfelt principles. Secondly, as I said on the morning that my case was heard, I was not asleep, but convicted on an officer's lying testimony that he heard me snoring, not visual proof that I was sleeping. I have more respect for drug users or alcoholics than liars, and you wonder why people have no respect for the law. On the day that my case was initially heard, I was asked how I wanted to pay for this ticket when I was convicted and became a sleep criminal. I then said that I did not want to pay it and that I should be locked up, but I was told I could not be locked up because sleeping is an infraction. Well, I guess it's now a misdemeanor, considering that a warrant has been issued. My worst fears were tested when I was sent by this country to go camp in a foreign land when I served in Vietnam in 1966 and 1967. Jail cells do not faze me. With God as my witness, do with me what you will is what I intend to tell this judge or commissioner who I have to go in front of.
Thank you, Dennis. You also have, of course, another case coming up, which I guess at some point we'd like to talk to you about, where apparently an officer, a security guard with First Alarm, who observed you allegedly engaging in, I don't know what, under the influence or something, then, well, the entire First Alarm security system apparently was shifting people around, and somebody else made testimony that didn't actually see it. It's an interesting case. I know when that becomes possible, I'd like to talk to you about it publicly. Any comments? You've been kind of an observer of the homeless scene for a while. Have you seen much happening in terms of, has there been increased police pressure regarding homeless people outside sleeping? Has it remained low-key? What's the story?
Well, before the city council hearings and the task force hearings, it was much more rampant than it now is. I think because of the way they were doing things unchecked, so to speak, that they were probably told by the city council that they should pull in the reins a little bit. That the police should pull in their reins a little bit and quit running over people when they're really not causing any problems and are not violating any other laws by just sleeping at night. And considering that fact, things seem to have now slowed down. And I haven't talked to too many people who have been hassled by the police. I have not since either, but we'll see what happens.
Good. And you've been sleeping fairly publicly in your vehicle? Or?
I sleep in my vehicle all the time. I have been unemployed now for 13 months, and I have no choice.
And is this inside the city or outside?
Inside the city.
And you think the police observe your vehicle, see you, and ignore you, or don't see you?
Well, I would hope that they don't see me, but possibly I would hope that they are having enough compassion now that they have had a chance to consider what has been said at City Council, that they realize we're just trying to get some sleep and we're not actually criminals.
Thank you, Dennis. Anything you want to add?
That's about it for now. I'll give you some more later if I come up with it.
And Dennis was indeed one of the genuine homeless folks who came out of the streets and alleys, out of the woodwork, out of the bushes to stand up and speak about issues at City Council for the limited amount of time that Mayor Byers allowed people to speak. Next week, we have another half hour of this show, but let me give you a preview of what's going to happen next week. You may remember Eddie DeBolt talking about police harassment on the show about a week ago. Eddie DeBolt is now in jail, and we're going to follow that. He's in jail for unauthorized contact with a parole officer, actually probation officer, and we're going to follow that story. The Rotkin-Silva debate, who won, who lost, what really was said that needs to be examined in depth, the magnet theory. Hopefully we'll be following that issue when the show returns on Sunday from 11 to 1:30. An interview with Eleanor and Robert, two folks who are really among the most eloquent homeless folks on wheels who have spoken to the city council. We aren't going to have time to play their interview today, talking about the significant intervention of a new civil rights agency in Santa Cruz to defend the rights of the mentally ill and mentally disabled and physically disabled. Albany, the destruction of the homeless community there. You can read the story about this in this issue of Street Spirit, newly out on the street, the April Street Spirit, the homeless newspaper. You can get it downtown, often in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, thereabouts. Just don't patronize the bookshop. That's store will not allow certain homeless activists in there because they opposed owner Coonerty's downtown ordinance to sit on the sidewalk, go to jail. So lots of stuff coming up. And on April 21st, that's next Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, and whatever the date is, next Wednesday is the day I'm talking about, between 10 and 11:30 in the morning, we're going to be replaying the Rotkin-Silva debate. For those of you who want to hear it, didn't get a chance to hear it again, and mark that on your calendar, 10 to 11:30, April 21st. Yeah, 21st is a Wednesday, so that's correct. And again, I want to remind you, if you want to talk about the Kosovo situation, Voices from the Village has an opportunity for you to do that. That's the community television station. You can call in starting about 7:50 at 425-4920, 425-4920. Hopefully also on Sunday we'll have an update on Arnold Abbott of Love Thy Neighbor. That's the fellow in Florida who stopped feeding the homeless under pressure from churches and police. He's what he'd been doing for, 8 or 9 years, he finally stopped doing. Well, we have an interview coming up with a man who not only feeds homeless people, he puts them up in his church, the Reverend Wiley Drake. He has been taken to court for it, he has been convicted of it, and he still refuses to stop. We're going to talk with him on the phone. Actually, we're going to play an interview we had talking to him. And it's really quite enlightening. So stay with us for the last half hour of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
Okay, it's April 15th. That's Taxi Waxy Day. And it's about 11:10. We're out here at Frederick Street. And we actually have...
Looks like the wrong interview, folks. Hang tough here. We'll find the right one in just a moment. We had it a moment ago. We are going to find it. In the meantime, if you have any thoughts about anything you've heard, we do have a call-in number here, 427-3772. Okay, well, we're on the phone now with Reverend Wiley Drake of Buena Park, California. Hi, Wiley.
Hello, how are you?
Hanging in there.
Yeah, well, to just sort of give you an update on what our latest progress is, we currently have three cases, legal cases, with the city. One is a preliminary injunction that they had against our original patio building. We moved everybody out of that building and put them in a new temporary building, and asked them for a occupancy certificate, and they refused it.
They being the city.
They being the city, until we put sprinklers, fire alarms, et cetera, ad nauseum on there.
Now, what we're talking about, of course, is about 50-odd homeless people that you've been sheltering in your church.
Right.
Even after the city, determined to stop you from doing so, took you to trial.
Well, yeah, they took us to court almost a year ago. I was convicted of four criminal misdemeanors. In fact, the matter is, we are working presently on the other case, which is our criminal appeal on my criminal conviction, and that'll be coming up in the next month or two.
Everybody in the country should have such a criminal conviction, Wiley.
Yeah, right. So we're working on our criminal case, our appeal, which we're going to appeal that. We also have a preliminary injunction case against us from the city, and we're fighting that. In fact, I go to court in the morning on a part of that.